I don't think I can talk about April 8th, 1994 without bringing up Kurt Cobain. That was the day his body was discovered at his home with a suicide note by an electrician. We'll find out later that his body had been there for days, and an entire generation and a half was absolutely shook. The memorial was a couple days later, Pearl Jam were on SNL a couple weeks later, and Eddie had a small tribute to Kurt. Not too long after, I remember being with my buddies skateboarding around the neighborhood, just trying to make sense of what happened. I'm not sure an 11-year-old is really equipped to understand the complexities and nuances of what happened. I'm not sure parents in the 90s were really equipped to explain the complexities and nuances to an 11-year-old. Add to that opinions of older siblings and aunts and uncles. But as quick as it started, as quick as the conversation about Kurt and what happened started, it turned to, well, who's the next Nirvana? And one of those candidates just dropped an album.
It's time to relax. You know what that means. Glass of wine, your favorite easy chair, and of course, this compact disc playing on your home stereo.
Do you remember arguing about how to pronounce the band's name? And I don't mean how in Canada we used to say Nirvana instead of Nirvana, or how until recently we all thought it was Chad Kroeger instead of Chad Kruger, but Offspring versus The Offspring or The Offspring, like, it feels like such a silly argument, right? But imagine you heard a radio DJ say The Led Zeppelin or The Pearl Jam or The Metallica. You'd think this person is a moron because you own the album, you own Smash, it just says Offspring. There's no The. But then you watch the music video for Come Out and Play, or Self-Esteem, or Gotta Get Away, and Much Music's also calling them The Offspring. Who's the idiot labeling the music videos? Because they're wrong too. Everyone's wrong but me.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills! Then
you found out later in an interview that it is, in fact, The Offspring. The band was named after a B-movie called The Offspring. They were born to kill. Their previous albums, their self-titled debut in 1989 and Ignition from 1992, both said The Offspring, but no one you know, like absolutely no one you know in real life owned either of those two albums at the time. But apparently, their breakthrough album Smash just said Offspring because they couldn't fit The on the album art. I guess changing font sizes was just really expensive in 1994. So one of the themes for this series has been the idea of selling out. Green Day were called sellouts when they signed with a major label before Dookie. Soundgarden were originally called sellouts by the Seattle scene when they signed with a major label, though the title didn't really stick with them because the first couple albums on A&M didn't do so great. Then there's The Offspring, who would get hit with a sellout label later with like Ixnay on the Hombre and Americana, but we'll deal with those stories in 2027 and 2029. Probably. Smash was the opposite of a sellout album. It was released on Epitaph Records and became the best-selling album on an independent label ever. Which, yeah, it's a nice thing to be known for, but it did more than any other album to lift the California punk scene of the early to mid-90s. Green Day's Dookie was released first and sold about twice as many records, but Smash, being on Epitaph, home to Rancid, NoFX, Pennywise, and of course Bad Religion, Smash's success gave the independent label a much needed cash infusion and helped their label mates get the attention they may not have gotten otherwise. Pretty good for a band Epitaph didn't even originally want. Radio played a big part in Smash's success, specifically getting it on K-Rock in LA. Epitaph didn't have the marketing budget of one of the major labels. Even the recording budget wasn't exactly huge. $20,000, even in 1994, didn't get you very far. Noodles said in an interview with Louder that they were constantly calling their studio to find out when it was empty just so they could sneak in at a discount price. I don't know when the last time you watched the video for Come Out and Play was, but it wasn't exactly a Michael Jackson budget music video. They made it for under $5,000, and most of that was spent on the rap party. The Offspring's previous album, Ignition, from 1992, sold maybe 15,000 copies by the time Smash was ready to be released, and they were already a band the label wasn't high on. Epitaph owner and Bad Religion guitarist Brett Gortz didn't want them originally. He told Kerrang, "They sent me their demos periodically, but I declined to sign them. I thought the demos were good, but not really good enough for me to want to take the plunge." Ironically, the band that they didn't want, that they didn't want to spend a lot of money on, was the band that made them the most money. What in the world happened to you? I've spent a lot of time this week contemplating Smash's legacy. At the time, this felt like an absolute monster of an album. This new album by this new band, well, not really new, but new to us, with songs that spoke about gang violence, toxic and abusive relationships, paranoia and self-loathing, with those heavy riffs and songs that would like start and stop and start like Nirvana, but it was its own thing, with ska and Middle Eastern influences that somehow were all still very punk rock. I don't know if we feel the same way about The Offspring as we did back then. Maybe it was the popular, more mainstream hits like Pretty Fly for a White Guy or Why Don't You Get a Job or Original Prankster that changed the way we think of the band. But does it matter what they produced after? Smash paved the way for an entire scene. Its authenticity connected with millions and has endured the decades. 3 to be exact, and many more to come. Smash is the way you deal with your life. My guest today, my co-host on Power Afternoons with Ed and Nicole.
Hello.
It's Nicole.
Hello.
Nicole Welsh joining me. Well, that, I don't know, continuing to be in the studio with me.
I was very polite. Hello. Hello.
So when I was kind of putting this list together and trying to figure out who I was going to talk to about which album, I kind of gave you the list. And I was like, gave you first dibs on like, what do you
want? I know, I felt honored. Thank you.
Which ones do you want to talk about? And like, you were like, I want to talk about Ill Communication.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming up, I think, in a month or so.
I'm so excited.
We're going to have to do this again in a couple days for Hole.
Yes.
Live through this. And the other one you said you wanted to do was Offspring Smash. What did the Offspring and in particularly this album mean to you?
Okay. So I didn't start rebelling against my parents and the man until about the age of 5. And that was when this album came out. So the first, I think one of the first records I ever bought was Offspring's Americana.
Okay.
And then I kind of backtracked, right? Because my brother had all the good music. Yeah. He had like Beastie Boys and he had the Offspring album and he had Smash album. So then when I found that album, it was like, you can't stop me. I'm the best. And that was like when I got into like rock and roll, because I was more into like pop music back then. But for like quickly after that is when I got into like more rock stuff. Yeah. So it didn't last. My pop phase didn't last very long.
It's amazing how much influence the older siblings have.
Oh, yeah.
Because
right?
I'm like the oldest, but both of my best friends have older siblings.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and even like, I think most of my friends I grew up with actually in elementary school, most of them had older siblings whose musical taste kind of like
was more elite. It was more mature, you know?
Yeah, because I think like the first two albums I ever owned were like Michael Jackson Dangerous.
Yep.
And Bryan Adams Waking Up the Neighbors.
Oh gosh.
I remember which order because I think they both came out in the same year. Then I remember getting like the Criss Cross record.
Okay, to be fair, though, that album is really good.
It is really good. Great if you listen to it backwards. When was the first time you remember listening to Smash, and when was the last time you remember listening to Smash, aside from when I was like, hey, can we talk about this album?
Okay, so let me think about this. Smash would have came out 30 years ago, so 1994, right?
Yeah.
And then Americana came out in 97. It was probably the year 1997, 1998 is when I first heard the album.
So you mentioned you first got Americana, then you backtracked to get to, like, what about, like, hearing Smash the first time, you're like, oh, what is this?
It makes me want to break stuff, but in the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I find Smash, lyric-wise, I find it... And this is weird to say because they swear a lot on this album.
Yeah.
But it's very poetic,
mm-hmm.
you know, versus, I mean, Americana is still, you know, it's a great album.
Yeah.
But I find Smash a little more, it's a little more grungy. It's a little more heavy. It's a little more like stick it to the man kind of thing. And that's, I don't know. It's more fun, I think, than Americana.
Yeah, it's definitely less polished, right?
No, like this yeah, is, this it's is less, yeah.
Still an independent release, right? Mm-hmm. Haven't gone on a major label yet. And it's kind of, you know, they didn't really have anything to lose. Because even Epitaph Records, the independent record company they were on, didn't even really want them.
Right, and then it was Columbia, right? They signed Columbia. With Columbia.
Yeah, there was... I didn't do the post-Smash, too much of the post-Smash research.
Yeah.
But I remember, yeah, there was it was a money issue between like what Epitaph was making off of them and what they should be making.
Right.
So they're like, you know what? If the indie record company is just going to screw us, we might as well go with a major label.
That's fair.
What was the last time you remember listening to this album, like front to back?
Well, you reminded me because I am the most forgetful person on the face of the planet that I agreed to do this with you. But I listened to it about 5 times since.
Okay.
Since about a week ago.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
The first time I listened to it again, I was packing. And I was like, this is not good packing music. This just makes me want to rage, like, and like break all of my things. And then I listened to it on the way to work today. So, yeah. Last time was, I mean, this past week.
Listening to it the 5 times in the last week or so, do you think of it as a timeless album or do you think of it an album of its time?
See, this question is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, and we're just, are you asking me as a fan of The Offspring or are you asking me as a fan of music?
A little bit of both. I mean, to me, like, you answer this how you want. I always think of, like, timeless versus of its time, right? Because these are all the albums we're doing
right.
are classic albums and, to a certain degree, are timeless. But I'm thinking, like, if you gave this to a 13-year-old kid now,
mm-hmm.
are they going to listen to it and think this is speaking to me as I am now? Or is this like, oh, this is like dad rock?
You know what? I think then my answer is going to be of its time.
Yeah.
Yes, because I think it's a lot different now. Music is a lot different now. The Offspring sound a lot different now, right? And that happens to bands all the time. They grow, their music grows with them. As an Offspring fan, do I think it's timeless? Yes, that is my answer. As a fan of music in general and rock music, no, I don't think it's timeless.
Do you think this is the Offspring at their peak?
Ooh. Oh. Oh. No.
No?
No. Yeah. I think it gets better for them.
Yeah.
And then it gets a little worse for them.
Yeah.
I think they were their sweet spot was somewhere in the middle.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I think, honestly, between Smash and Americana, those are probably my 2 favorite Offspring records.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just different.
Yeah.
They just sound different, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to pick between the two. But I think if someone was like, oh, have you heard of The Offspring? And the other person was like, no, I haven't. This would be the album you would hand them to listen to first. Yeah. You know?
I think this question, especially in the context of The Offspring, is a tough one for me.
Yeah.
Because it's my favorite Offspring.
Mm-hmm.
I believe sales-wise, it's their most successful.
Oh, really?
But at the same time, I feel like as a popularity as a band, they would get more popular with Ixnay on the Hombre and Americana.
Yeah.
I think Ixnay was 97. Americana was 99. Now that I say that out loud, we should double check.
This
is like our regular show. Americana was 98.
Okay.
Ixnay on the Hombre was 97. Conspiracy of One was 2000. See, it's just like our show. We Google things after the fact.
Exactly. Well, we were close enough. We're old. So.
Anyway, so I feel like as a band, right, like, you know, if you're going to put them in a music festival,
okay.
right, when Smash was out, they wouldn't be like a headliner.
No.
Up there much, much later as popularity as a band and as singles, right? I think, you know, Pretty Fly for a White Guy, as much as like hardcore Offspring fans hate that song, I don't think there was a bigger song.
It's huge.
For them.
It's a massive song.
Same with Why Don't You Get a Job?
Yep.
Or Original Prankster. Like, these were big, almost top 40 type hits.
They were, yeah.
But as far as like the album and like what that meant, like, I remember like my friends who didn't even like rock music loved that Offspring album.
The Americana one?
No, Smash.
Smash, okay.
So like, yeah, it's a weird, yeah, like where, in a way it's a peak, but in a way like they had a different type of peak later on.
I respect, yes.
What's your favorite song on the album?
Oh, gosh. This is a hard question because I like all their radio hits are great, mm-hmm. right? But you hear them all the time.
Yeah.
Like Come On and Play, Self-Esteem, Gotta Get Away. Yeah. Like those are all great songs. But I think I like Bad Habit the best,
okay.
which yeah. is song, what, 3 on the album?
3, yeah.
Yeah. And I like it because it starts out like very like... It starts out very slow and instrumental, and mm-hmm. then it's like, boom, drop. And again, like back to the thing I was saying about like their poeticness in mm-hmm. some of the lyrics. This song is just like, there's talk about guns, there's yep. swearing, but somehow you're still like, wow, this is kind of like Shakespearean in a way, you know?
It's a great song. Yeah. If it didn't have so many bad words, we yeah. should probably play it. has that always been your favorite song off the album, or is it just maybe did radio kill... Gotta Get Away or Come Out and Play or Self-Esteem for you, and you've had to change that over the years?
I mean, Gotta Get Away is really good, but yeah. and Nitro was another good one.
Oh, that is
the second song. Yeah, but I don't know. I just, my heart always goes back to Bad Habit.
I think so. The one that sticked out for me re-listening to it was What Happened to You. And I was like, oh, yeah, I used to listen to the crap out of that back in the day. And I haven't listened to it in forever because I haven't listened to Smash in forever. Nicole, thanks for just hanging out a little bit longer than normal. And we'll be doing this again in, I guess, a couple days.
I'm surprised you're not making me apologize to you for hanging out longer than normal.